There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Easter Monday. Glad to have you along. And live local talk over the hour. We continue our conversation with State Senator District 32, Chris Elliott, and getting ready to go back to Montgomery tomorrow. And you said most likely in committee, it's lottery vote time.
Lottery vote time, and expect to see that bill moving out of committee and onto the Senate floor. The question is whether or not the competing bill, Senator McClendon's...
The McLottery bill
is going to move as well. But I think Senator Albritton's paper lottery-only bill will make it out of committee tomorrow.
Say it does make it out of committee, goes through, and makes it gets signed by the governor, run through that, okay? It gets passed. What does that look like in 2020? When we're looking at our Scantron thing, what does that say?
So what that's going to look like is a vote of the people, and that's important to note. It's a constitutional amendment that changes the Constitution of Alabama to allow for the legislature to pass enabling
legislation. It's a two-step process.
It is very much so. So the legislature's got to pass a constitutional amendment to put it on the ballot. Then the people have got to vote in favor of it. Then the legislature has to pass the enabling legislation that says, okay, now here's how it's going to work to establish the lottery commission, if you will, and things of that nature. So Senator Albritton's bill lays out the broad strokes. What's the lottery going to look like? It's paper, it's scratch off, it's Mega Millions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's it. And then it goes into detail about where the funding is going to go. It's going to pay back the oil and gas trust fund, and then it's going to go into the general fund. But that's about it on the details.
How much is owed to the oil and gas trust fund?
About $170 million. The oil and gas trust fund is about a $3.5 billion trust fund. Right.
We're supposed to be using the interest off that, not really messing with the, you know.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, but,
and that interest, very similar to like a university endowment or something, mm-hmm. continues to fund the ongoing operations of the state of Alabama. And I'd like to point out one more time, that is the Oil and Gas Trust Fund.
Which all comes out of Madison County.
No.
Colbert County.
Absolutely.
Etowah.
Nope.
It comes out of Russell County.
It's all coastal Alabama, including some Citronelle oil fields, so let's not leave
that. Washington County
out.
In the mix, yeah.
But
Mobile,
all,
Washington, Baldwin County.
Yep, it's all coastal Alabama, though, and I make that point every single time.
I bet you they love that.
They do.
Yeah, I think they probably think that's great. I want to run to another couple pieces of legislation that have been bouncing around, and on the list here, go down my list. As you can see, I've typed myself up a list of this. Let's go. Speaking of Senator Albritton, let's talk ethics. The ethics bill, help me, the regular Alabama citizen, understand something. So we pass, what was it, two sessions ago? Two or one?
2010, usually.
10.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, it was that long ago. The sweeping ethics reform. Sweeping. I remember talking about sweeping ethics reform. And then what happens?
Well, I think that bill had unintended consequences, and it's not unintended consequences for legislators. It's not even unintended consequences for elected officials, county commissioners, city council people, etc. It's unintended consequences for school teachers. It's unintended consequences for firefighters. It's unintended consequences in that bill covers 1 million people in the state of Alabama. And oh, by the way, it's the firefighter's wife, and it's the firefighter's father-in-law, and children that get covered by that particular ethics bill.
You can't get anything above de minimis.
It really is. And one of the things I did, Sean, and I've made some lobbyists mad, and some of my local folks too that come to Montgomery to lobby me for things, because I posted something you probably saw on my Facebook page, mm-hmm. that said, I don't want anything from you. I don't care if it's de minimis or not. I don't care if it's a candy bar or a cough drop.
Right.
I don't want to. I've stopped going to the receptions or anything like that. I don't want anything from anybody.
Right.
At all. Don't
right.
leave me anything. And
right.
don't invite me to anything. If you want to have a meeting with me, I'm happy to talk with you. Call me on my cell phone. I'm happy to talk with you.
Right.
But I want to have an honest conversation about the problems that we have with this ethics law without people thinking I need a free ham sandwich. I'm good. I got my own ham.
Right.
And after Easter, I've got a lot more of it that I need to eat. But I think that's an important thing to note. We just have unintended consequences. Now, let's talk legislative process for just a minute. And I've seen this throughout, not just with the ethics bill, but a lot of other things as well. People get really wound up when they see the first draft of a bill.
Mm-hmm.
That's the legislative process is like making gumbo. We're in coastal Alabama, right? Everybody understands gumbo starts out as flour and lard, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
You got to make a roux.
Okay. Well, that's not what you're going to end up with at the end. You're not going to end up with flour and lard at mm-hmm. the end. You got to stir it. You got to add just the right amount of heat. You got to add the right things at the right time. I would encourage everybody, when you see a bill, sure, read it, but understand that the likelihood that that bill goes through this entire process and comes out on the other end just like it started is very, very slim, almost infinitesimal. It's just not going to happen. Senator Albritton's bill is a lot like that. I like certain parts of Senator Albritton's bill. Mm-hmm. I like the disclosure, where if you get anything, you have to report it. Whatever it is,
right.
It has to be reported.
And where does it get reported?
Well, it get
that's always a question. You know, if it's reported to some file that's kept down, you know, in the basement of the state house there, you
well,
know.
Well, the good news is all of that's public right now. I think the current copy of the bill has it going to ethics, mm-hmm. but it's all reported. And I think that when you start talking about prosecution, that helps a lot, because what are your two stages in prosecution, right? You got to have this intent to do something. You got to mm-hmm. have the actual act, right? You have mm-hmm. done something. You've passed legislation after somebody what gave you something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it becomes very easy, because it's all very public. The act of voting for something is very public, and the receiving of the
right.
thing
yes.
is public and reportable. Now all of a sudden, if you're a prosecutor saying, hey, that guy clearly did this for that and this was his reward, or vice versa, it becomes easier to build a case that way. And I trust the voters to look and say, this guy took in all these little gifts and whatever, and ski trips and watches or whatever the heck it is. Sometimes it's not a bad idea to give folks enough rope to hang
yeah.
themselves
yeah.
with and say, you know what, that guy really does not need to be representing me. I want that guy that signed the letter that said he wasn't taking anything. I want
right.
that guy. And I think that's an important distinction to make. But we've got to be careful that we're not hurting teachers who are getting a gift from their kid or a
right. I remember that when that came out, and I was talking about the things you wouldn't be able to give the teachers gifts. You know, if I was in your position, I would take the same thing. If I'm, because there's something I've always thought about. If you are in the legislature, and somebody gives you something, de minimis or whatever, and you just kind of, okay, just put it with the other stuff. I got a stack. You can go back to my office. I got a stack of stuff people bring to the radio station, right? Okay, thank you. But my heart had me voting a certain way, right? I felt I was representing my constituents. I'm going to vote this way. But you go back and say, Sullivan took a this and that from so-and-so, but look, and then he voted this way. I'd have voted that way anyway. But now it's, you're not beyond reproach. You got to be beyond reproach.
You have to be, and I don't ever want there to be any doubt in my constituents' mind that I'm voting my conscience. I'm voting what I believe is the right thing for the people of my district and for coastal Alabama. It certainly isn't because I got some, you know, $20 cell phone charger. I don't want a cell phone charger. Do not bring me a cell phone charger that says FM Talk 106.5 on it. And you get those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I got a stack of them.
Well, and thank you, but you can keep it. I don't want it. I have my own. But those are the types of things that I think we can do to just advance this conversation about ethics a little bit further and say, we do have some problems with the current law. We've overshot. We need to make some changes. But we don't need to make any changes that will harm the public's trust in us.
It needs to be. This process needs to be. And I got people, you know, asking about Mike Hubbard and all that. We can go, you know, go through the, still not in jail yet, but I think this needs to be beyond transparent and sunlight and whatever other cliche you want to throw in on it, that when that gumbo is ready, okay, back to your analogy, when we're ready to start ladling out bowls of this gumbo, that we go through a long-form discussion and an ingredients list on a whiteboard, whatever, you know, put it up, let's write out, here's what's in it, here's what this means. Very specific, because a lot of times I don't think that gets done out of Washington or out of Montgomery. Things just get moved through, and y'all may think, well, people don't care about the details. I want to see something, whether it's a YouTube video or something, go, all right, in regular language, I can understand, Chris, that, hey, here's what's in it. Here's what this means. It means the firefighter can get the ham from the Kiwanis Club, but the state legislator cannot get the gift from whatever
ever is what it should say.
Whatever big mule in the state, or little mule, or small mule, or donkey.
And that's it. You shouldn't be able to take anything. But I'll tell you, you talk about clarity, and that's exactly what the current law lacks. And and you see public officials complaining about the lack of clarity, complaining about the fact that the Attorney General will say one thing, the Ethics Commission will say something else, the Secretary of State will say something else, the District Attorney will say something else. The problem is there are too many people. I don't like Dad's answer. I'm going to go to Mom. I don't like Mom's answer.
Look at Video Bingo in our state.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay? I mean, this place is doing one thing, the other place can't do the thing. So if y'all are going with it, to be able to look at it and turn around and say, this is okay or this is not okay, in simple terms, who it applies to, who it doesn't apply to, and let the people see that before there's a vote on it, so people know exactly what we're talking about.
No question. And then you look at the current bill, and everyone thinks this is a great – the current law that we have, this is really locked down. And I can tell you right now, in Montgomery, you don't have to buy a morsel of food or ever a drink if you want to right now, because it's all – there are loopholes a mile long that you can get through, and you can they're educational this, or there's this exception for that. And that's one of the things – that's where I just said, enough is enough. I'm out. I'm going back to my trailer in Wetumpka and cooking my own hamburger.
There you go. That's what you got. You got your trailer up there?
It's great. It's a little travel trailer, about 21 feet long.
See, I need quiet. To get that. I've got the – because the rates, by the way, because I'm heading back up, y'all, I think next week. By the way, I tell you ahead of time, I'm coming to Montgomery next week, going up there to do a couple shows up there. And I stayed not at the, not even mid-pack, we'll say economy value hotel, as near as I could get booked to Goat Hill. And it was expensive. It was expensive. So,
my goal at the end of the legislative day is to get out of downtown and away from Goat Hill. I'll go read my bills, do my homework, and be back in the morning. But nothing good happens down there after the sun goes down.
All right. Coming right back, more with State Senator Chris Elliott, because I want to talk about a story we had last week about the growth in Baldwin County and what that means legislatively. When you talk about things, apportionment from gas taxes and more. We'll talk about it when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 123 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Monday. Hey, here's your shot at picking up tickets for Bryan Adams and Shine a Light Tour coming to the Wharf Amphitheater. This is Friday, next month, Friday, May 10th, 8 o'clock show, which is good for people like me. There's a lot of rock and roll shows I want to go see, but they start like at 11, so there's not much chance for me. But Bryan Adams at 8 o'clock in the evening on a Friday, I can do that. Tickets are on sale now, Ticketmaster.com, Wharf Box Office, or charge by phone, 800-745-3000. Caller number 6 right now at 343-0100. You can win them right now. Caller number 6, 343-0106. Get a pair of tickets for Bryan Adams, Shine a Light Tour, the Wharf Amphitheater. That show coming up next month, Friday, May 10th. Good luck. All right, in-studio guest, State Senator Chris Elliott. I thought about you last week. I was talking with Brendan Kirby. We were talking about some of his numbers rolling out for the growth in Baldwin County, looking at versus Shelby County, looking how the growth is going. Really, the growth in the state is really what? You got to be, there's 6 counties that are driving the entire growth numbers for the state of Alabama?
That's correct.
All the others are at net neutral or losing. 6 of them, and the big takeaway here is Baldwin County. You've been talking about it for a while.
Well, we have, and it's been something that's been on my radar for a number of years, obviously as a county commissioner, trying to make sure we stay ahead of it. The big news now is not just the volume of growth, but the rate continues to go up as well. And that poses its own unique set of challenges as we watch it, how fast we are growing.
Right.
So we continue to watch that pretty closely. The raw numbers, about 5,400 more people last year alone. Every decennial census, we are adding more folks. That's every 10 years.
Right.
Than the total population of more than half the counties of this state. And that was something that when I said that on the Senate floor, it really got people's attention.
Once again, so this is the additional people moving to Baldwin County is like having some of these less populated counties moving into Baldwin County, the whole county moving in.
More than half of the counties in this state are every 10 years we're adding more than they have in their whole county.
Unbelievable. So this obviously, and we talked about this from a county commission level and the challenges to that, but what about as a state senator? What do you do to deal with this?
Well, my big job now is not necessarily to implement the policy, right? That's the county commission's mm-hmm. job. That's the mayor and the council's job, and the governor and the executive branch. But our job is to make sure we got the funding for it. So my job in Montgomery is to go get the funding for mm-hmm. these things. And that's specifically what I'm trying to do right now, is making sure that we get the transportation funding that we need. Sean, I got appointed the other day to the ATRIP.
ATRIP thing, I saw that. What's ATRIP? What is
that? The Alabama Transportation Improvement Program. These are projects all around the state that local municipalities and counties apply for. I expect that coastal Alabama will do very well in those funding rounds. So I'm looking forward to that. Also serve on the Joint Transportation Committee. That is where the big 5-year plan is made for mm-hmm. major ALDOT funding priorities. And then I also serve on the Transportation and Energy Committee in the Senate. I mean, if it has to do with asphalt, I'm on it.
Right.
And I did that on purpose. That is our big issue here in coastal Alabama, from I-10 bridge to other road projects across both Mobile and Baldwin County, that I am keeping a very sharp eye on to make sure that we stay ahead of this growth.
Well, that's okay, because that's going to be some of the issues, though, I would imagine, in a meeting. Here I am, I'm going to come from one of these small counties, and I'm going to have potholes and road, I'll have infrastructure that's been worn out, and I'm arguing the need to just bring it back to what it was. Right? I got to bring it back to what it was because it's deteriorating. You got to deal with that. At the same time, you're making the case, it's not just I'm fixing potholes. I got to make roads wider, bigger, more connectivity. You're having to make a case, you know, that's even bigger than, hey, I got to get these roads resurfaced.
The good news, though, is the data's on my side. And that's one of the things.
Yeah, but that gets lost in politics, doesn't it?
Well, it does, unless you make it real simple. So.
Okay, good. I like simple. Yes.
So what we try to do is make sure that we illustrate the fact that the traffic's here, right? The, mm-hmm. the vehicle count, the trip count, if you will, is here in coastal Alabama in Baldwin County. Okay, now once we've done that, the next stage is where does return on investment come from? This is my business background. Where can you put the money that will get you the most return?
Sure.
That's the tax revenue that's generated from it. Well, you put the same dollars in Selma, mm-hmm. in Dallas County somewhere, and that's not going to generate.
No, it's not. Revenue. But that's the problem in business mindset. I'm 100% on with you. I've talked about this over the years, but in Montgomery, on Goat Hill, there's a push and pull. But I hadn't gotten any road money in Selma in a while, and here they want to send all this road money down to Baldwin County. All those fancies down there.
We're called coastal elites, is what they call
okay,
us.
Okay, is that the term for us?
That
okay.
is, and very unfortunately, good. Those are my initials as well, so it's really kind of stuck. But it's happening, and that's okay. what they're calling us. But if we can make the argument that those dollars really return investment, and that there will be more money for Dallas County if we invest it here overall, mm-hmm. it's catching hold. And I'll tell you too, that's why these committee assignments are so valuable. That's why I am serving on 6 standing committees and
wow.
5 joint committees, a total of 11 committees. I mean, most House members are on 2 or 3 committees total.
Right.
So I'm very busy, but that I wanted to be. I mean, that's why I go to do this job. But setting those priorities early on in the planning stages is what's so crucial. Whether it's ATRIP, whether it's Joint Transportation Committee, whether it's the Transportation and Energy Committee itself, to make sure we are setting these priorities early on. That means that I don't just get a vote on the floor. We're deciding what goes to the floor.
All right, we've got 1 minute here before we have to go to the hard break. Or when do we start seeing asphalt poured that we think is new asphalt poured because of the additional revenue? We start taking in revenue from the gas tax in, is it October?
Yeah, it'll be later this year after the governor signs the law. I will tell you, there are already projects going on in the state. You saw some of the big 5 mayors talk about it the other day.
Mm-hmm.
They're betting on the come, if you mm-hmm. will, mm-hmm. and are already spending some of that money that they would have otherwise earmarked for something else. So to answer your question, I think you're already seeing projects, you know, go ahead because they know more is coming, and they're not banking that money for later. and you will just continue to see increased funding on infrastructure and investment on infrastructure over the next decades.
All right. Well, that's what I think is going to – people are going to be looking for that. They're going to see real-world applications of that money.
Our share, I'm tracking every single dollar that ALDOT spends in Baldwin County, every last nickel. And we're going to make sure we get everything we can.
Good things. Good things coming for us, hopefully, here in South Alabama. Chris, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
State Senator Chris Elliott, our guest. And congratulations to Randy Henry out of Mobile. Won those tickets to the Bryan Adams Show coming up next month at the Wharf Amphitheater. When we come back, we'll talk about Shrinking the Divide. The event is back. It's coming up this weekend. What is it all about? Well, Tim Smith and Robert Brown will talk to us about that when we come back right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Big thank you to State Senator Chris Elliott for stopping by. And yeah, I was mentioning that the Midday Mobile show going on the road. I think I got to check the calendar. I'll check it during the next break. I think it's next week. I'm up there for a couple days in Montgomery and watching the legislative session right there from next door to the State House, just across the street over there at the Capitol. So we'll talk more about that coming up in just a little bit. Also mentioned coming up soon, the Shrink the Divide event coming to our area, coming back. And in studio, Tim Smith, Pastor Robert Brown, to talk more about this. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting us. We're glad to be here today.
Good to be here, Sean.
It's good to have you.
Blessings to your listeners.
Yeah, they need it after listening to me for an hour and a half, so
we
appreciate
understand.
You've been coming in to talk about this. First of all, talk about, number one, the overall, Shrink the Divide. What is Shrink the Divide, Pastor Brown? What is Shrink the Divide, and how can people come out and be part of this?
Well, this event is part of what God has put in our hearts. We believe that there's only one church. And so basically, the pledge group, this Shrink the Divide is just one of the events that we put on yearly. And it's to get the community of God together in one place and let us share the love of Jesus Christ together. We believe that what's missing in our society is the power that's locked up in the church because we're divided. And we believe that when we embarked on this, we began to believe that we could get this thing to a place where oneness would come into the hearts of every believer. And we would find ourselves empowered to do things that we've never done before. And so that's the gist of what this is all about.
Okay, so as you said, the pledge group, so this event is one of other things you do, right? This
exactly.
is something. Okay,
yes.
So talk about the pledge group in general. What is the idea? What is the mission statement for the pledge group?
Well, it is to shrink the divide. And I'm glad I have some paperwork here in front of me. The pledge group is us coming together. Number one, we've been together for about 4 years.
Okay.
Black and white men and women coming together, lawyers, judges, pastors, business representatives from the city, people from our law enforcement, and we all had one agenda. First of all, we had to get to one another because we were there with different races mm-hmm. and different professions, but we all had one thing in common, and that was Jesus Christ. And that's what we're trying to get out to our community, that when we all recognize there's just one God, so there can't be but one church. And so what we've done over the last 4 years is we've come together, and quarterly we put on luncheons, and we invite people throughout the city to come in, and we have them at various locations in the city. And we talk about the mission of this. This is a ministry. It doesn't sound like it, but it is a ministry that God has organized in us to bring the church of God together. And what we have done, Tim sitting here next to me, we had to fall in love with one another. Because we all have different things in our past, prejudice and bigotry. And when we come and get open with one another, be transparent, our hearts have been changed. And we love one another. We do things together on a usual basis. We go out to lunch together. We make sure that we speak to people that don't look like us. We want to be involved with things that not our communities would be involved in. We try and cross the lines as often as we can and try and bring out the good in everybody.
Yeah, I think about this, the tool of the church, and speaking right here on the day after Easter, too, it seems to me, it's how long ago, I don't know, this was formed, but it's like, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. You look at all these other ways they're going to bring folks together who don't look like each other or whatever, and you go, holy cow, there it is. There it is.
Yes.
It's the, I mean, it's the thing that everybody is involved in and can bring them together from wherever they are. I mean, that's it's really a brilliant idea.
Well, it really wasn't our idea. We think it came from on high. That we had to get to know each other, and then we had to get to understand each other, realizing, Sean, that we come from very different places. I mean, we've got Trumpites, and we've got anti-Trumpites. Mm-hmm. We've got Catholics. We've got Protestants. We've got men. We've got women. And we realized that we not only had to know each other, we had to come to understand where each one was coming from, and in the regardless of our differences, and come to a place of respecting each other so that we could trust each other. That was our original goal, was to build up within this city a group of people that if a Ferguson happened, if a Baltimore happened, if a Charleston happened, that the authorities could call on the church mm-hmm. and say, come and let's speak peace into this situation, and let's find out what we can do to work with each other. But in that was our goal, to build trust. But as Robert alluded to, God had a bigger picture, and that is that we've come to love each other. And the relationships that the steering team has, about 25 of us, have with each other is probably deeper than most people ever encounter in their lives. Spent breakfast today with one of our brothers who's going through a hard time. He shared confidentially about some major things going on in his life that he was so relieved to have somebody he trusted to share that with. Now, it had nothing to do with racial divide, but it had all to do with denominational divide. It mm-hmm. had to do with the fact that there isn't but one race. Mm-hmm. The human race, they have different ethnicities and everything, and there's really only one church, and so we're trying to act out of that reality that we're just one blood.
Yeah, I want to get a reaction from Pastor Brown and from you as well on this, because I've said this over time, diversity without commonality is a problem. We talk about diversity, and I think about my friends and my peer group and the diverse group there, but we have commonality, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain interests or whatever that bring us all together, no matter how we look. Same thing I see for friends of mine that served in the military, that they have, friends and people they fought with that look every different way. But the commonality was they served our country in the armed forces. And then, look, what's bigger than this? And the Christian church. Now you have a commonality. Diversity is beautiful when you have a common base as Christians, or you have a common base as members of the U.S. military or something. You have this diversity because you have a commonality. You come back to this thing.
There has to be a deeper truth, Sean, to whatever the diversity is all about.
Right. It makes the diversity so much richer and better when there's a commonality that in this case is the church.
And in our country, the issue that you alluded to, there are a number of issues that people talk about diversity, but the concern is that we don't have a common understanding of who the United States of America yeah. is. We're a constitutional republic, and there are people that want it to be something else. And so how do you have diversity with people where there isn't that common, deeper understanding?
Yeah, I think one of the major issues here is that people who don't look like another person, we always have assumptions about one another.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the enemy uses, the devil himself uses as a target for us, is that we're afraid to sit down and be honest with one another, to talk to one another, mm-hmm. to reveal what's really on our heart. Perhaps the way we used to be, not the way we are today. You know, as we sit around the table talking in our meetings, just the steering team group, we reveal things that were part of us in our past. You see, we all come from somewhere, but we're all trying to get to the same place. And there's only one route to go there, and that's through Jesus Christ. And the church is so full of power that sitting there idle is because we won't unify. And the scripture tells us that God will, he'll put a blessing on unity. And it's quite a shame that a city like Mobile, a beautiful place to raise a family, just so many beautiful people here, but we walk by one another like we don't see one another.
Right.
We can be sitting in a restaurant next to one another, and we act like they're from a foreign country because they have a different color or whatever. You see, just being willing to speak to someone that doesn't look like you could break some ice. And we've tried those things, and they work. I mean, I've had people to speak to me that I thought weren't going to speak to me, and they spoke to me first. And I said, wow, this is what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not rocket science that we're talking about. It's just using common sense. And it's using the love of Christ that's in our heart to help break down these barriers, shrink them down. That's not a building large enough in Mobile to house the church.
Right.
But the church is not a building. It's us. But the church has got to come together and speak with one voice, and that voice has to be the voice of Jesus Christ. That's the only hope that we have to change our city, to change our nation, to change our communities, to change our schools, all of these things. The power lies within the church, but the church has to come together as one.
Yeah, and I
one
think
of
it's,
the reasons
yeah.
for that, Sean, is that at the bottom line, racism is a sin, and there's only one way to address sin effectively, and that's through forgiveness and the power of Jesus, the blood of Jesus Christ. And once we came to understand that we're dealing with a sin here, not just prejudice or biases, we're dealing with sin, that means that the social gospel, the social secular efforts to resolve the racial issue in our country won't succeed because they're not dealing
right.
with it at its deepest level.
Right. I mean, this is why when I first, I guess last year, found out about what y'all were doing, I said, this is it. It can't be forced by government. You know, you look at it and compelled by government, because it doesn't come, it comes from top down, doesn't come from the heart. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at whatever the things are that are commonalities, whether they are military or, you know, our kids go to school together or all these things that bring people that are diverse together, and they go, oh, wow, it's my friend. We're, you know, I get along with this person famously. What bigger than the church, and look at our city and Christians, that brings every... It's brilliant.
There is no power in this earth like the power that the church has. But...
Bigger than government. I mean, it's, you know,
well,
you can talk
government
about...
Government is more of a problem than it is a solution. Regardless of what part is in there, they create more problems than they solve.
The law of unintended consequences.
Exactly.
They can start out to do something good, and the government just has a way of muffing it up.
Can you all hold on a second?
Certainly.
We run the news break, and we'll come right back and talk more about this, and specifically when the events are going on here in our area. Tim Smith and Pastor Robert Brown from Shrink the Divide in studio right here on Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 152 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Hey, by the way, tonight, sports night, you just heard the promo there with Dalton, and we'll have Corey LeBounty, and we're talking some... Are y'all going to have Jim talking football here? Do you understand that it's hockey time in basketball playoffs, and golf and all that. You could talk football. Yeah, we check them out tonight, 7 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5 for Sports Night, and continue our conversation about the Shrink the Divide. The specific event that's coming up on Tuesday, gentlemen, is what? Explain to folks, Pastor Brown. Tell me what's coming up on Tuesday.
Well, we're going to have a big gathering at Cottage Hill Baptist Church, and on April 30th at 7:30. And we're believing that the invitations that have been out all over the city, all over the county, we're hoping that churches from all over the county will come together and hear what God has put on our heart to do. We have an awesome speaker coming from,
from Rwanda, Bishop John Rushahana from Rwanda, who heads up the Rwandan National Commission on Unity and Reconciliation in this, the 25th year after their summer of genocide, in which 800,000 Tutsis were slaughtered in 100 days by their fellow Rwandans. Mm. 800,000 were slaughtered. And they have made a remarkable recovery as a nation and are kind of the diamond of Africa now because they have relied on the faith community to bring about the reconciliation rather than the secular community.
That's a lesson for us back here in the United States.
It certainly is. And we believe he's going to bring a unifying message because, you know, when you involve in things that he had to go through in his own nation, to see that can be reconciliation when the Spirit of God is introduced into any situation. And we're hoping that on that particular night that we have a diverse group of people coming not just from different churches, different races, different thoughts, but if they can hear the voice of Christ through this steering team that God has brought together, we believe that change is on the way for Mobile.
And you were talking about some of the things, the real-world applications of this, about congregations going to different churches, you ministering and preaching the gospel at a different church, and then that pastor coming to your church. Talk about this process.
Well, as a matter of fact, the first time we got together, I really closed the doors on my church one Sunday, and we took our whole congregation to his church.
That's great. In Satsuma.
So that's great.
First Baptist Satsuma. I love my pastor brother, Roy Hill, down in Satsuma. He's a great man of God. We've fallen in love with one another. We've become sister churches. And he came to our congregation and brought his worship team and his people at our church here in West Mobile. And we had just such a wonderful time together. And you see, those people, they came not just because he asked them to come. They saw what God had done between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it served as an example.
Exactly. Yeah. Pastors have to lead the way.
Yes.
And because we have influence. And it could be good influence or it could be bad influence. But once they saw the love that we share, and we go to lunch together, we've taken some of his leadership out together and some of mine, we've talked together about what God has put on our heart to do. And we believe more of that is needed. We're launching a bid to try and get more pastors to actually just fellowship together. And we may not necessarily get many of them to let their congregations, but the pastors have to do it from the pulpit.
And that way you're not just telling, you're showing.
You're showing it. Actions speak louder than words.
This is fantastic. Okay, so April 30th, 7:30?
6:30. Till 8:30. 6:30 to 8:30. And the pledge group is presenting it, but Cottage Hill Baptist is kind enough to allow us to use their facility.
So what do we, somebody listening right now wants to be there, do we need to sign up somewhere? How do we go through
this? Just show up.
Well, I like that.
It's free. It's free. Show up.
Show up and join us. So we'll be there, and we'll remind folks of this between now and then, but just show up. We can come on in. We don't have to sign up ahead of time. Don't have to come specifically with a group from a specific church.
Whosoever will, let them come.
Very good. Gentlemen, thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for having us.
This is y'all. This is the future, I think. It really is, and I'd love to see y'all out there coming up on Tuesday. So we'll remind you of that between now and then. All right, I am stepping on out. Paul Feinbaum's show is on next. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow morning for Mobile Mornings. Remember, check out podcast of this show or the 40-some-odd hours of live local radio we do every week here over on our podcast page. Go to fmtalk1065.com. Click the link for podcast, and you'll see the tab there. You can search through by the day, the show name, all those kind of things are on there. Or we'd love it if you just subscribed at iTunes or Stitcher to get those podcasts delivered to your phone. And also Spotify, if you get your music on Spotify, our podcasts are on there as well. Plus TuneIn Radio, the app you use to listen to us on your smartphone, it's got our podcast there as well. So check them out. You gotta really be hiding to stay away from our podcast out there. We sure appreciate all of y'all that download them every day. Thank you very, very much. All right, see you in the morning, Mobile Mornings, right here on FM Talk 106.5.